Jesse Lancaster had always wanted to go to sea. He had taken a boat up to Alaska from Seattle to Anchorage, had worked for a brief stint offshore up there, but he had never fulfilled his lifelong dream to stand on the deck of his own seaworthy vessel in the midst of a long, uncertain voyage and contemplate the vastness of oceanic space, to inhale the salty, vagabond winds, to see with his naked eyes, unobstructed 360 degrees, the curvature of the earth, to glimpse with wonder all manner of unknowable life, sustaining, enduring, perpetuating, undisturbed or merely unconcerned with the human travelers who ride the hazardous, unpredictable border of hydrosphere and gaseosphere. Sometimes, in early evening or along about dawn, when the prairie breezes came up breath-like over his menial, sanguine form, he would stand upon the rig's quarterdeck, gazing across the rolling, turbulent landscape of the Williston Basin, and imagine the rig, an old but hardy steamer, bounding over the waves. In a way, the rig was like a ship, self-sufficient, with its own power source and crews, its own mission to perform. He was its captain. He would look up through the girders on the tower and view the huge mountainous clouds rolling overhead, or the movement of the stars as the earth turned beneath them, and for a fleeting moment he could stir within himself the sensation of that moment, that movement, and he would hold to his brake handle as though it were the rudder of the world. That the Williston Basin had been a great lake millions of years ago made profound and perfect sense to Jesse Lancaster. Special drill bits were needed to chew through the fossil and shell formations at those depths. Jesse would sometimes pause by the shale shaker there along the catwalk and reach his hand into the delicious muck and find shells and strange fragments of prehistoric life. He kept the most unusual specimens in a shoebox back in his trailer. The then and the now were somehow connected through him. He could feel it, and that feeling is what kept him going. Tonight, there was something out of sync, something disturbing and wrong. He was restless and uncomfortable, jittery and on edge. The worst of it was that this feeling had come upon him for no apparent reason. The engines sang, the pipe turned to the right. Carl and that cowboy crew were going about their duties and everything was running sweet. Now that the decision had been made to begin rigging down the following day, even George was beginning to behave like a human being again. But Jesse paced in the top doghouse. He had remained behind after tower this night with the intention of giving Marty and Cynthia a little privacy. But really, he was attempting to remain in a familiar place long enough to give those shadowy forms lurking below the surface of his memory a chance to reveal themselves. Surprisingly, he found himself staring into the kindly face of Flip Johnson, the first man he had seen die in the patch. How tough it was back then for young men willing to work, a job so hard to find in this harsh and pitiless territory. You take anything, any roughnecking job. Men would come from miles away, leave their families. At every location stood lines of hungry, desperate men waiting for a chance to show what they could do. The man on the rig who fucked up once, got hurt, was replaced right then and there by the next man in line. And if he couldn't get her, he couldn't stay. Getting some experience was the hardest part of it all. On Flip Johnson's second day of work, he had been told to climb the derrick and replace some cable, had lost his footing, and on the way down he had torn his strong hands into unrecognizable clumps of raw meat and bone, pulling on that cable in a futile attempt to break his fall. Another man was called from the line of hopefuls, and the work had gone on. There was Pete Cavanaugh, a driller who had gotten his arm caught up in the chain as it sucked into the cathead, tearing the limb completely off in the longest split second Jesse had ever experienced. On the way into town, they ran out of gas. Pete bled to death. 8 pints. Doesn't sound like much, does it? Jesse could sit down and drink 8 pints of beer without batting an eye. It's a lot of blood. When he moved up the ranks and became driller, suddenly responsible for the lives of his crew, the condition of the rig, the integrity of the whole, he vowed that no one stranger's fortune would ever be worth the life and limbs of one of his own, and his crews throughout the long years had been grateful, loyal, and like family. Family. Jesse shook his head, pushing the truly unbearable images back. Not tonight, he thought. Besides, the patch has broken many a roughneck's heart. She was a tough mistress. He didn't consider his particular set of heartbreaks and disappointments at all different or special. He poured himself a drink and pulled up a stool beside the knowledge box where he could watch from the corner of his eye the goings-on out on the floor. Carl was at the brake handle, and he was really putting the boys through their paces. Like Ziggy. What a funny little guy that Ziggy was. Jesse had been on more than one crew where the current driller was simply voted off that brake handle and Ziggy voted on. Jesse believed it was Ziggy who taught him that smooth as silk touch when bringing that pipe out of the hole, how the flow of the moving pipe could increase or decrease with the fluid movements of a well-working crew, or how to take a little weight off the bit while turning to the right so the entire weight of the drill stem wouldn't force the bit to go anywhere else but down, down, down. Seeing down hole, Ziggy called it. He claimed he could close his eyes and see the walls of that hole plain as day just by touching that brake handle. Jesse always chuckled at the notion. Then he frowned. It's just trading one form of warfare for another, Ziggy reasoned lightheartedly when he left the patch to fight in Korea. Well, many a good man hadn't returned from the Williston Basin either. When Jesse was still a worm, he and his crew arrived at work one night to find everyone on location dead. They had unexpectedly hit a pocket of H2S. You could almost see it, invisible waves in the air like heat rising off a tarmac. The first whiff, you know there's something very wrong. The second whiff drops you. The third whiff, you're dead. Right now, Jesse could smell trouble. He searched his memories for some clue to his present confusion. His stomach turned. These things had made an old man of him, he reckoned. Or about to. Every day he would look in the mirror and wonder if today was the day his age would suddenly catch up with him. How long would he be able to trust his faculties? How much longer could he get her? Tonight he felt as though he had come upon an unexpected crossroads. Over the years, wisdom and experience had replaced youth and bravado, and this had been a comfortable thing. Would he find out too late if he was slipping? Most men, even the good ones, had gotten out long before this. The only guy he knew who was older than he and still drilling was old Blackwell. Blackie would say, "Who gives a rat's ass how old you are, Jesse? Drill till you drop, son. Drill till you drop." Yeah, there was a roughneck for you. True blue, tried and true, through and through.